Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
What light from yonder window breaks?
Too bold. 'Tis not to me she speaks. Two of the fairest stars in all the heavens, having some business to entreat her eyes to twinkle in their spheres till they return. See how she leans her cheek upon her hand. Oh, that I were a glove upon that hand, that I might touch that cheek.
Oh, me.
She speaks. Oh, speak again, bright angel.
Oh, Romeo, Romeo. Wherefore art thou, Romeo? Deny thy father and refuse thy name. Or if thou wilt not, be but sworn, my love, and I'll no longer be a Capulet.
Shall I hear more, or shall I speak of this?
'Tis but thy name that is my enemy. Thou art thyself, though, not a Montague. What is Montague? It is no hand.
Hello, and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
We are doing all musicals in March. Well, first of all, we're doing a new episode every single week, as we've been doing
for a year.
For now, a year. It's been a year. It's been a whole year. And it's been fun for us. I've really enjoyed it. And part of that, pledge to you to keep it going every week is that we've expanded our definition of book to include shorter literary sources like short stories or poems or magazine articles or plays, as in today's episode. But before we get to that, and I cannot wait, there's a few places where you can interact with us and other listeners of this podcast on the internet.
We do have a basic Facebook page, so be sure to like it, and that way all the episodes are posted there. But we're much more interactive in our Facebook group, and this show really depends on people giving us suggestions. We have great ideas on our own. Don't be afraid of that. We're not going to run out of ideas. But sometimes you guys just bring something out to us that we would never expect, and they turn into a great episode. So you can join our Facebook group if you're on Facebook. Book Versus Movie Podcast Group. Ask to join. I mix up my show sometimes. But
that's okay. You can go there too.
Yeah, you can go there too, and then you'll find us. But it's Book Versus Movie Podcast, Book VS Movie Podcast, excuse me. Ask to join, and then you can come on in there. We also like promote future episodes, things like that. We're on Twitter at Book Versus Movie. You spell all those words out. We're on Instagram at Book Versus Movie Podcast. And we have an email, and you just spell out the words Book Versus Movie Podcast at gmail.com. All those places you can send us comments and suggestions. Also, we just got a new logo, or just a few weeks ago, and we have a brand new stack of stickers. And Margo, I need to send you some. And
yeah,
if you guys would like some, please send us an email with your address, and we'll drop them in the mail for you.
And we have a new Patreon, haven't we?
Yes, we do. So we've been putting all of our episodes from 2018 and before, we're putting them up there to make room for all these new shows that we're putting together. That's how the internet works. So we want to welcome Angela to our Patreon page. Thank you so much, Angela. We have a couple of just very affordable options. We just put up there The Commitments. Today we're recording this on St. Patrick's Day. That was a super fun episode. So now that's on the Patreon wall for our Patreon members. And also, if you leave us a review in iTunes, a 5-star review, we will read it on the air. And that's also just another place if you want to give us suggestions and you don't know what to write for your review, just leave some suggestions. We'll totally accept that.
Oh, yeah. We welcome it. It's yes. Great. Now, today we are doing, well, I should say, if you're joining us, mm-hmm. I would recommend checking out last week's episode, which was very fun to do, mm-hmm. which was on cats. The 2019, I think we can say disastrous film adaptation. That was so much fun. But today we are doing, as a nice like chaser to that, we're mm-hmm. doing West Side Story, which of course is based on Romeo and Juliet by William Shakespeare or whoever it is that actually wrote these plays. It may or may not be. My husband is absolutely like, you will not convince him that it is not that Edward de Vere guy. He is
okay. I was
completely
say,
in that camp.
Yeah, this is the thing. We always talk about the creator of the content that we have. So it's a book or a play or a magazine article, whatever. And then we talk about the movie. And the thing with sometimes we get somebody that's so famous, so legendary, so, you know, a part of the world and the world and culture. It's like, what would I say about Shakespeare that would be interesting or new or that you don't even already know? He's just one of the most famous names in theater ever.
And so much of our language yes. comes from those works. Have you ever seen Upstart Crow?
No. What's that?
Oh, you will love it. There is a hilarious BBC comedy called Upstart Crow, written by Ben Elton, recently produced, starring David Mitchell from Mitchell and Webb, who I also love. And it is about Shakespeare. What if William Shakespeare were actually that guy? And what would his life have looked like? And so David Mitchell plays William Shakespeare. And so he has a life in the country in Stratford-upon-Avon with his wife and his family, who are all illiterate. And then he has a life in London, in the city, with all his cosmopolitan friends. And it's very, very, very funny. I strongly recommend it. But there's a lot of theories out there as to whether or not he was a pig farmer raised by illiterate country folk.
Yeah, he died at 52. We're not sure what he died from. I mean, being back then, it could have been anything. He was born in the 1500s. I mean, anything. And then there was times when the London Theatre had to close because of the plague. Does that sound familiar? Mm. And that sort of had him, he started writing poetry after that. But yeah, there is some controversy over whether or not he wrote everything they say he wrote or if he wrote any of it. We don't know. But I think that's kind of fun, people having that mystery there to kind of bandy about. I say yes, it's Shakespeare, because why not? But
yeah, why not?
Why not? You know?
Sure.
Sure. So we'll just talk about this work. It's one of his most popular. I mean, he's ubiquitous in our culture. It's hard to mm-hmm. even, there's been so many adaptations of his work in theater, on film. It's extraordinary. But we'll just talk about today, Romeo and Juliet, which came out somewhere in the 1590s, usually 97 is what people say. And it's this, and it's, I think he created this expression, star-crossed lovers.
I think so. And this is one of the plays that there's many and for many reasons, like, but this is one of the plays that is used to prove that Shakespeare wasn't really the pig farmer guy, because that guy, like the actual biographical, or whatever you want to call him, the real guy, Shakespeare, because it was a real guy, apparently never left Britain. And this play is set in Italy, as we'll discuss. And mm-hmm. And there's certain details that are accurate that somebody who had never been there would probably not know. Anyway, this one, I mean, and certainly for Americans, mm-hmm. every American high school student reads this play.
And they get the Cliff's Notes or the Spark Notes.
What? I don't know what you mean.
I know, exactly. It's in acting classes. It's like I said, it was an episode of the Brady Bunch. Remember that when Marcia got really conceited when she was cast as Juliet and that she had to play the nurse?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is a part of our culture. It's a story about two star-crossed lovers. Juliet, who is with a very wealthy family, she's 13, going on 14. And then Romeo and his family is at war with her family.
It's about two children
who get married. No, once again, this is the 1590s. If you're, 52 was a long life. So maybe.
Yes.
Around 16, people did get married and start having families. So it's not. But they're in Verona, Italy. When you first introduced to the story, it's the staff that works for both of the families. They're kind of warring in the streets and, mm-hmm. and they're sort of warned about not.
That's how deep the feud is.
Yeah.
That even the staff can't stand each other.
They're going to brawl it out. They're throwing it down. And it's meant to say, like, there's things created in the culture that these two kids see each other, instantly, bam, fall in love. And Romeo was in love with another person, and then she turned him down. And then he sees Juliet, and Juliet, receives his love and accepts it and then shines it back to him. And he's like, damn, we got to get married right away. And the world is set up that their families cannot interact with one another. She's supposed to be with Count Paris. She's supposed to wait 2 years and she's going to marry him. And Romeo is just going to find somebody else. And there's a lot of longing. There's a lot of romantic language. There is a romance here.
It's very romantic. And I should say too, like, one of the things that didn't really occur to me when I read this in high school, lots of things, first of all, the fact that they're children. Secondly, this is a time that, women had zero agency.
Right.
So if your dad said, hey, I arranged for you to marry this rich guy, that's what you're doing. You wouldn't even think about what you want or whether that's what you would want to do. Like, it doesn't occur to you.
No.
To question that in any way. And so the fact that, I mean, just speaking about Juliet alone and forgetting the feud, Let's say it doesn't exist. Let's say they're great friends, the two families. The fact that she would defy her father's plans for her, because, I mean, a lot of stuff for the family, there were political alliances, mm-hmm. and what I want to say, business, partnerships, that this is how marriage was used. So for her to just defy that,
right.
to marry somebody that she loved, what? Like,
right,
that was
right.
insane.
Yes.
So I think it's hard to understand, and I'm even getting now, like, with my 21st century mind, and even as a grown up, I see that I can't quite grasp how nuts that must have been for people.
Absolutely.
It must have just seemed just so out of left field that no wonder she died.
Spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler. I wonder what that must have been like. How would that go over with an audience of that time, I wonder?
He had a theater at the end of his life, if it is Shakespeare who wrote all this, but there was a theater that in the last couple of years of his life that sat 3,000 people. And it was, it's like 70 miles north of London. It's not a quick hop, a skip, and a jump. Like, how many people lived there that went to the theater that went specifically to hear his works? I mean, and this must have blown their minds. This must have been really edgy. And that's why when it's been remade, there's times where I think it's 1996. It's with Claire Danes and Leonardo DiCaprio. That's the edgy. Yeah, there's been, people kind of see it as this edgy love story. It's two teenagers that are so Twitter-pated and so crazy for one another that they're, there was a whole Papa Don't Preach thing, like Madonna's video, like this whole theme of intense young love I think a lot of people can respond mm-hmm. to it, but most of us would not have the guts to defy our fathers, or it would be very, very tricky. I mean, that's also the church is involved in these decisions. I mean, it's all
yeah, it's
life.
No
yeah.
like it's not your whim.
Yes,
there's so many people involved and so many fortunes involved, and oh, I know. It's such a foreign thing to us today that I wish I could. It's one of those I wish I could go back in time and like glimpse.
Yeah,
and obviously it must have been so exciting and mind blowing that these expressions of his, you know, people probably walked out of the theater being like star-crossed lovers and mm-hmm. like all these expressions that we use now, like you would talk around the water cooler, you know, after everybody saw the big movie of the summer or whatever. Mm-hmm. I wish I could see what that was like. It must have been very exciting.
It must have been beautiful. I mean, it's so beautifully put together, and the language is gorgeous. I mean, when
it's and fun and oh, funny
and yeah. So is it Mercutio who's
the friend?
He's hilarious.
And
Monica
and the nurse
is a pistol. She's hilarious. And Juliet's mother is it's a funny thing because the mother is kind of a wimp. Like, you know, she acts like she knows everything, and then she at the last minute like, hey, can you stand with me, nurse? While I'm trying to tell her what to do. It defies expectations, and people come across as pretty human. But Romeo and Juliet are madly in love, and there's that whole scene where she's in the balcony and Romeo, where art thou, Romeo? And they start talking to one another, and it's gorgeous. As a kid, I was like, this is lame. Like, what's this dialogue? I listened to it as an adult. I'm like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. Like,
it's very moving.
It really, really
is.
I put a clip at the top of the show. It's my favorite is the 1968 Zeffirelli film.
Shout out to Zeffirelli, man.
Right.
I mean, it's so good.
It's gorgeous.
Really holds up.
Yeah.
And it's so witty and so funny. And you just buy it. Those kids are really great. Mm-hmm. I think, too, like another thing I don't quite have a handle on with as a 21st century person who can vote and everything. is that, you know, you talk about he had this theater that sat 30,000 people. Well,
3,000.
3,000 people.
Yeah.
The play is about the nobility. You know, these are mm-hmm. very, very well-off families. That's why these alliances and these feuds are such high stakes, because, like, it's like whole towns are involved. And I bet there had to have been an element on top of, like, this crazy thing about marrying for love. There had to have been this sensational angle too, in like the nobility. They're just like us, you know.
Right.
It had to be like a Kardashian kind of a thing going on, and or like just like with Harry and Meghan these last couple of weeks, all the crap we know about these people's lives, you know. And it's just the sensationalizing of it for the masses. I think that had to have been part of it too. But it's all of it would be a flop if it weren't for the just brilliant, witty, mm-hmm. scathing, astute, you know, the writing is just everything.
So they want to be together. They desperately love each other. Their parents are like, no way, we're enemies.
Nope.
And they secretly get married. And they spend mm-hmm. one night together, and then they're separated by their families again. And
yep.
It's a big
Which
stink.
I think that's more than Tony and Maria got, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
so there are some differences, of course, between book and movie, apart from the setting and the, you know, the culture and so on. One is that they actually get a night, they get married and they get a night together as a married couple. In again, spoiler alert.
Yeah, yes.
we spoil everything, but I mean, probably you know this already. Both of them die, and it's one of those things where you're like just if this one person hadn't held you up while you were walking to the place, or if the it's just like, it's set up with these like moments of chance. Mm-hmm. And just walking this way instead of that way, or stopping to talk to this person instead of that person, means that both of these kids are dead.
And everybody, they like the priest that marries them, the friar, excuse me, mm-hmm. He hopes that this is going to bring the families together. And it's like, oh, boy, no, it does not. It does the opposite.
Oh, I can't imagine that it would.
No, and it sets why off would a you, chain
I
events.
Always think that at yes. that point. I always think, why, oh, why would you think that? That's not going to happen.
No. So Mercutio and Tybalt have a duel, and Mercutio dies, and then yeah. Romeo feels so bad that he kills Tybalt, and then he's taken away, and then Juliet, in her grief, she thinks that Romeo died, so she's taking a potion that she thinks, well, either this is going to kill me or it's just going to knock me out for a couple of days, like 2 days and 40 hours or something like that. 2 and 40 hours, excuse me. Romeo sees her body and he thinks she's dead. So he stabs himself. Oh, no, yeah. He takes the, or does he stab himself or he takes the potion?
I can never remember. It goes back and forth because one of them seems to be dead, but isn't really dead. And right. the other one comes in and is like, oh, they're dead. And then I can't go on living. And they kill themselves. And then the first person wakes up and sees them and then they die. But I can never keep track of which one is which. Isn't Juliet, doesn't he poison himself? Juliet kisses him for the, I don't remember.
Yes. So she tries to kiss him to bring him back. And then she realizes it's not going to work. So then she stabs herself in the heart. Juliet's hardcore. Like, she's a ride or die, literally.
I gotta say, again, this is a teenage girl, you know, the 16th century, who is badass enough to defy her father's wishes for marriage. Yeah, I can believe it.
Yeah. And that's the end of the story. It's been, like we said, it's a part of the culture now, and everybody sort of knows about it, and it's tragic, and it's funny, and it's romantic, and it's sad, and it speaks a lot about your position in life and station in life, and can you ever get out of where you are? Why, you know, why am I stuck to rules that I didn't make? That things mm-hmm. like that. And so there's been many, many plays. There's always some version of it out there, but in the late 40s, early 50s, New York was churning out a lot of musicals, and they were doing really well.
Boy, were they ever.
You just look at that time period.
You can't even keep up. I know. It's ridiculous. It is. It's like one a week, practically.
Yeah, and like super talented people. You know, Leonard Bernstein from the R.E.M. song. We have Jerome Robbins, and we have Stephen Sondheim. It's a murderer's row.
It does not get better than this.
And so Arthur Lorentz is the actual writer of the piece. So he's the one who took the material. And as they were writing and workshopping, and I didn't realize this until we started doing these and doing intense looking into them. There's Carrie the Musical. There's a podcast about Carrie the Musical. Mm-hmm. And so I realized, like, it takes years for a play to come to light. You have to do all these workshops and you have to put on all these shows for
producers. They throw out whole numbers and whole characters and all kinds of things. Yep.
So originally this story was going to be called East Side Story, and it was going to be about a Jewish boy or a Jewish girl and an Irish Polish boy. And they were going to be in the Lower East Side. But what happened was that the culture, and that's New York City, is always kind of changing, is that immigrants were starting to move uptown. So we had Spanish Harlem, which is just above Lincoln Center, or it's in the 120s, or it's right below the 120s, excuse me. We have Spanish Harlem, and then we have Harlem.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And then, immigrants were coming that way, and it was largely where Puerto Rican immigration was skyrocketing in the 50s, in the 60s. And, you know, whenever there's a big influx of people, New Yorkers aren't always as tolerant as you would think. And
you would hope.
There's all kinds of history, like anti-Irish, then anti-Black. I mean, anyway.
There's always somebody to hate.
There's always someone to hate, being the point, which is also point of Romeo and Juliet. So anyway, the action became delinquents and teenagers. All of a sudden, teenagers were like a culture. Mm-hmm. And so someone had the bright idea, well, what about these teenagers? They're being rebellious. Why don't we update it to modern times? And it'll be a modern day, but we'll have it. At first, it was going to be Lower East Side. So they said, let's make it the West Side. And so the west side of New York City is where you have Lincoln Center, which is this gorgeous place. Everybody knows about Moonstruck. There's a whole scene in Moonstruck that's mm-hmm. there. Before that was built, which when my dad was a kid, that was kind of a rough neighborhood. That's part of the place where they set it. But then you have Spanish Harlem, and then you have Harlem. And right. So Arthur Lorenz is our person. And here's some of the things he's worked on. He worked with Alfred Hitchcock on Rope. He wrote the musical Gypsy. Worked on The Way We Were. He wrote that story. His companion was a man named Tom Hatcher. They met in a Beverly Hills store where Hatcher worked. They were together for 52 years until Hatcher died. But he wrote many, many things. And this is where he started, was like, okay, let's make it Puerto Rican and then Irish Polish.
Yeah.
And those are the people, they're going to antagonize one another. They're going to, and that's, and so they workshop it and they get the funding for it. And so now we have, instead of the Capulets and the Montagues, we have the Jets and the Sharks. And
right.
The Jets are the white gang. And the Sharks are the Puerto Rican gang. And we have Tony, who was used to be a Jet, and he's trying to get a job.
Yeah. He's outgrowing down it. And have a real life. Yes, he's outgrowing it.
Right. And he falls in love with a girl named Maria.
Maria. And the only girl named Maria in Spanish Harlem somehow.
Only girl. One girl goes to the window when he says Maria. I mean, but they fall in love instantly. And then Jerome Robbins was the choreographer at the time. And I think he was a hero to Bob Fosse. Like, all these things kind of get.
Oh, so influential. Yeah.
But we have Leonard Bernstein. I mean, oh my God, this soundtrack was my childhood. My mother played this all the time.
Oh, my father used to play Johnny Mathis's rendition of Maria and somebody else's of so, There's a Place for Us. I don't think it was Johnny Mathis also, but every Sunday, every single Sunday, we'd wow. blast Johnny Mathis all over the house. This, a lot of hits, you know, it was the Saturday Night Fever of its day.
Well, this is the stage play. And so that comes out in 1957. And like Margot said, like a year later, they come out with the soundtrack for the cast, mm-hmm. and it sells like crazy. I mean, it's like it's one of the top selling albums of the 1960s. That's like if you yeah. throw in the Beatles and the Stones and Motown, like this is still.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's yeah. So it's a no brainer that they're going to turn this into a movie. I mean, it does. It opens in 1957. They win a few Tonys. It's the same year as The Music Man. And I do not like The Music Man. I've never been.
Me either. I don't know why. I can't quite tell you why.
Yeah.
What it is about it. I start to watch it and I feel like I should be getting like into these songs, but they're like the Wells Fargo. And I'm like, oh gosh.
Yeah.
I just start thinking about like other stuff I could be doing.
Yes.
I don't know. I can't explain it. And I like, what's her name? Shirley Jones.
Yeah.
I love Shirley Jones, but I like all those people. I don't know what it is. I cannot get into it.
Same. But like what I was saying before, they had tons of musicals coming out this time. Oklahoma. I mean, it was just all Gypsy, all these really great musicals. New York was just turning them out. And so it comes out in 57, then it goes to the London West End. It's been revived on Broadway like a dozen times. It's a ridiculously popular story to do. The last time they did it, they had Lin-Manuel Miranda translate the Puerto Rican gang's lyrics to Spanish. So it'd be a little more culturally yeah. accurate. And Lorenz is the person who directed that version before he passed away. So we get to 1961, and the rights were sold for $300,000, which is an astronomical sum. Mm-hmm. for 1960, and they start yeah. working on it pretty quickly. It was like it comes out in 1961, but they were working on it for a year and a half, and it's through United Artists. And should I
oh yeah trailer,
let's play the trailer.
It's long, but I think it's good.
Me too. Here we go.
Unlike other classics, West Side Story grows younger. Classics. West Side Story grows younger.
Comes out October 18th, 1961, and most people who saw it loved it, except Pauline Kael. She just, when she hated big time. But it stars, okay, Natalie Wood at her most beautiful. She's always beautiful. I mean,
she is. Yeah. Natalie Wood is great in this.
She was, and it was directed by Jerome Robbins and Robert Wise. They had Jerome Robbins was fired because all of the, he directed all the dance sequences, and he would take two or three takes. And it was 70 millimeter film. These cameras were like the size of my desk.
Oh, gosh. I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
And they're complicated.
Oh my God. The editing in this movie, and it did win award for best editing, is phenomenal. How they put all that together. Because there's overhead shots and everything.
Anyway, we're talking about the cast, but it's Natalie Wood, Richard
Boehmer.
Boehmer, Russ Tamlin, Rita Moreno. Oh.
And George Shakiris?
Yeah.
They're,
I don't know.
Boehmer, Tamblyn, Moreno, Shakiris, they're all alive. They're still with us.
Yeah.
In their 80s.
They are.
Kicking it. Rita Moreno just turned 89. I mean, and they're beautiful. I put a clip in the Facebook group. Russ Tamblyn was a dancer at the time and an actor, but his dancing
such
is...
Such a dancer.
Oh, my... just very
I know.
Acrobatic.
It's breathtaking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's gorgeous.
I know. This movie, and again, you and I are too young to know what it was really like when the movie came out, really. I feel like when this movie came out, like a lot of the people probably knew the songs. They were already massive hits. So even people who, I think of like my parents who were living in Oxnard, this movie came out when they started high school. So that, you know, all through their high school years. But I imagine people had to have known the numbers. And so it must have been so exciting to see the movie with all the songs that you knew.
Small fee in America.
Okay, buying on credit is so nice.
One look at us and they charge twice.
I have my own washing machine.
What will you have though to keep clean?
Skyscrapers bloom in America. Cadillac zoom in America. Industry boom in America.
Wealth in a room in America.
But I love going back to last week for a moment, one more time. Our big criticism of the 2019 debacle that is Cats was mainly that we said like they had taken all that money and invested it into doing a really, really awesome film of the stage version. Like they did in the 90s, but, you know, just do a 21st century version of that. That is not the road they chose to take. But here is yet another example of why that works so freaking well. This movie begins with a screen with a bunch of lines on it that changes color while you're listening to Bernstein's Overture. For, I forget, 3-4 minutes?
Easily.
I'm not mad about it. Maybe. I am riveted. I'm looking at the lines on the screen, just like listening to this music and getting carried away. I am already carried away by the time any kind of actual photographic anything is happening. And those establishing aerial shots of New York City.
At New York City of 1960, I mean, oh my God, that was my parents were kids. And I just think about that. And as
everything's so little.
It looks so little. It's so high up in the air. And they had a helicopter and the cameraman leaned out of the helicopter and was held by his belt loops, like belts, and just filmed down. And then he said, okay, I'm done. But it's a New York City. Like, it's like any city. It's always changing. And I love seeing changes like that. I just think it's thrilling. Mm-hmm. It's a big city. It's an exciting city.
It's so cool.
It really is. So they show up and then these are like a series of forever or like really bad joke telling was like, who are these gangs that are dancing and all this stuff? It's like, yes,
I know.
This is supposed to be that. This is how the movie is. It's a musical. So yes, they're going to dance their way through things. They're going to snap their fingers. There's jazz hands. Well, snapping, not jazz hands, but it's jazz.
But I love it.
I do too.
I think it's such a beautiful artistic expression of something that was not only really going on in New York City at the time, because you must remember this is also exactly the same period in which what's his name was writing The Warriors. Saul Urich.
Yes.
Was writing The Warriors. He's writing about exactly the same culture. These rival factions of different races and ethnicities and different neighborhoods. And it's very gritty. I mean, it's almost unreadable. It's so gritty. But that's taking that and elevating it to this high art. I wonder, again, it's hard for us, you and I, to really know, but it wasn't blacks versus whites, it was Puerto Ricans versus whites. But I wonder whether this piece of artwork I know it was reflecting the civil rights movement, but I can't help but think it must have helped change some hearts and minds.
Yeah, well, the whole point of it is that why do we hate each other? We're hating each other because we're different or because we have different accents or we like different kinds of music or dancing or whatever. And that's dumb. And it's dumb to fight over turf. It's dumb to fight over a couple of blocks in New York City that's going to get knocked down anyway for the Lincoln Center. What are we
Little
doing?
Do they know.
Little do they
right?
know.
Right? You and I are watching this like none of that is there anymore.
None of this is here.
I mean, it's imminently going to be bulldozed because, again, big swaths, like you said, are being bulldozed just for Lincoln Center alone to go in.
Yep.
Let alone all the other like luxury places that got built around Lincoln Center. But one of the things I really love about the movie, first of all, you establish it with this extraordinary music. Mm-hmm. It's really something. Then we go into these establishing aerial shots of the real New York City, what it really looks like, how really sooty. And there's not a lot of color there, right? It's all mm-hmm. kind of brown and like everything's covered in soot. Then we start the first scene with the snapping takes place again in New York City outside in like a basketball court, right? So they're outside and they seem to be on the real streets. And as the movie progresses, it becomes more and more and more stagey. Mm-hmm. Till you get to the very end, that last scene, and it all takes place under this one single spotlight, which we'll talk about that in scene and how it's all put together when we get there. But, mm-hmm. but at the end is couldn't be, you know, it, you're looking at a Broadway stage at the end, going from the actual streets, the air above New York City to a single stage with a single spotlight. Oh, it's so beautiful. And such a masterpiece.
It's so catchy. Like they start with "When You're a Jet," like all that stuff. So
I love it when they're running and it says "Jets" on the street. Come on.
So Riff leads the white gang. That's Russ Tamblyn, and he wants his best friend Tony to join them because they're going to rumble with the Sharks. And there's a Bernardo. And that yes. Then we have also two cops, Lieutenant Schrank, Officer Krupke. And originally they wanted the people to produce the show wanted to have this be the first Broadway play with the F word. They really didn't want to say Krupp you, but the standards of the time. So what are you going to do?
They went pretty far. They pushed the envelope.
They did.
Pretty far for the time.
But they show you that the cops, they're being, you know, hard asses on everybody. You know, they want to get the stop this whole gang thing. But they show you in this movie, they are much harder on the Puerto Ricans than they are on the white guys. And that's and there's that favoritism that shows right away. Nobody says it out loud, but you just see it in action. And I think people did see that and realize that the bias that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Maria is this young girl who just came to America for 1 month, and Natalie Wood, you know, they wouldn't do this now. And I should mention that Steven Spielberg is filmed already his updated version of West Side Story, but he sticks to the 60s version. He doesn't set it in another decade.
Oh, it's set in the 60s.
Yes. He stuck with that.
Oh, I see. I assumed that it was updated. Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, and you know, Spielberg, it's going to look great, right?
It's going to be fantastic. Yes, of course it is.
Yeah. So Maria has been in America. So I'm saying that because Natalie Wood, you wouldn't cast her as Maria now. She's not.
She is not Puerto Rican.
No.
And she does not sing.
And she's like, I think Russian. I think Natalie Wood.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's her background.
Yeah.
But she's 22 at the time. And she was dating Warren Beatty. They were in a movie together. Mm-hmm. And she really wanted Warren Beatty to play Tony, and Warren Beatty didn't want to do it, and the producers didn't want to hire him. So they hired Richard Boehmer, and they hired him mainly because he was like really tall and good looking, and he thought they'd look
good. Well, he is.
And he's a handsome guy.
They look fantastic together.
They do. Supposedly, she didn't get along with him. And she gave him kind of a hard time, and he never understood why. But like years later, they met up and they were totally nice. But I think it was because of, she's 22, by the way. I mean, she's young. She's just figuring her way around. But she's with her Aunt Anita, Rita Moreno. And she works at a bridal shop at a store that works on gowns and fixes them and sews and stuff like that. And there's a big dance, and I love the mambo, the school dance.
Oh, it's favorite. That is my favorite too.
I start crying because there's such great dancing going on. Like, they're so beautiful and strong.
Right?
And flexible.
Rita Moreno, the whole thing. The boys in that opening scene when they're dancing in the playground and they're just jumping all over the place. But with such precision.
Yes.
It's astonishing. And then, yeah, Rita Moreno is the star of this movie, and she is singing and she is dancing and she is acting her heart out, and I am there for it.
Yep.
I'm in. I'm watching everything she's making for the rest of her life. Let's go, Rita Moreno.
Yes.
That's my favorite scene too. That is my absolute favorite. She's so alive and so good.
And she's one of those people. She's won an Oscar and a Tony and a Grammy and an Emmy.
EGOT.
She's that talented and sharp and funny still. Like, she's still got it.
Did you see the One Day at a Time?
I did. I loved it.
I know. She was really good in it.
Yeah. So she is protective of her niece, Maria. Maria's only been to America for about a month. They go to this dance, which is just amazing. And then Maria meets Tony. And it's this, like, everything stops. They're smitten right away. And they dance a little bit, but they understand, like, they want to be together, but the people around them are getting annoyed and angry because they're not supposed to be together because they're different. And so different isn't good. We have to separate them. That's when Maria, she comes home and we have the balcony scene where he's going through the streets saying, Maria!
Maria! Come down.
No.
Maria.
Please. My mother and father will wake up.
Just for a minute.
A minute is not enough.
For an hour, then.
I cannot.
Then forever.
Shh.
Then I'm coming up.
Maria.
Momentito, Papa. Now see what you've done.
Momentito, Maria.
Cállate. Shh. It is dangerous. If Bernardo knew.
We will let him know. I'm not one of them, Maria.
But you are not one of us. And I am not one of you.
To me, you're all the beautiful...
Maruca.
Sí, ya vengo, Papa.
Maruca?
His pet name for me.
I like him. And he will like me.
No. He's like Bernardo. Afraid. Imagine being afraid of you.
You see?
I see you.
Oh, Maria, see only me.
Only you, you're the only thing I see. Forever, in my eyes, in my words, and in everything I do. Nothing else but you.
People are like, shut up.
She does. She goes, shh, come here. And so they have their balcony scene and they look beautiful and they look great. But, you know, it's not going to happen. There's going to be problems. And she, the next day, she does her song, I Feel Pretty, so pretty. And Anita is like, yeah, this is not going to happen. Like, get over it. This boy, he's, and she has her own scene where it's about, you know, leave him alone. You can't get together. Tony and Maria, they want to be together. And then Tony and Maria, they're, the people try to pull them apart. So then the gangs are getting more and more upset with one another. It's happening that there's going to be a rumble. Tony tries to make it that it's just fists and it's just two guys. They're doing this rumble.
Right. But nope. But no, this is America. And we always have to bring a gun to a knife fight. Always.
In America. And then is he stabbed? I'm sorry, Bernardo.
I believe he's stabbed.
Yeah.
I think he's stabbed.
And then Tony is out there with a gun, like all upset. And then they have, is it anybody? What's her name? I'm trying to think. Not Joy Boy. There's a girl that hangs around, but she.
Anybody's.
Yeah. She says they're all hanging out at a candy shop. And she's saying to them, hey, Tony's upset and he's got a gun and the cops are looking for him. And so the gang's like, all right, we got to stop Tony because he's going to go crazy. So Anita goes to there's like this candy shop where they
Anita, whose man has been killed.
Bernardo was killed. George Shakiris is so good in this movie. And he's so gorgeous and his dancing is so great. I mean, it's all these people are just so amazing. But there's a scene where Rita Moreno, and it's always upsetting, where she goes to the white gang's place. And she said that it was very hard for her because what they're saying are racial slurs, which is just terrible. But that they sexually.
Which she probably heard. Well, in her real life all the time.
She said when she was young, she heard that and she was sexually assaulted once by a group of guys. So it was bringing all that up for her. And so it was very upsetting for her to film. And you could see like she's shook.
Yeah.
And the boys that were the dancers were totally upset. They did, 'cause they like, we love you. This is just acting. Please, you know, don't be upset. But it all happened. So at the very end, Maria's trying to save Tony, but it's too late. Tony's going to get killed. And then she has the gun and then she's aiming it at the cops. She's aiming it at the gangs. Like, you know what? Now I'm mad. Now I have hate. And now I have a reason to shoot people.
I mean, who can blame her?
No one.
Who can blame her? This is a woman that is past the breaking point. Yeah. It's such she is so heartbreaking and you are on her side. You can't blame her.
Yeah.
You know, you could on paper look at that and be like, oh, you know, she's letting her gums flap and that leads to Tony being killed. But come on. I would totally do the same thing.
Yeah. And it's Chino who shoots him. And Chino is the guy that's like her Count Paris. He's the guy that her family wants her to hang out with and date. Mm-hmm. But she likes Tony. And so at the very end, they're carrying his body out and it's the white guy gang and a couple of the Puerto Rican gang sort of like symbolically taking him to his maker.
Yeah,
but it's like a funeral. So she has this black scarf. So one of them helps put the scarf over her head. And so she's walking in mourning and they take him away. And I forgot to mention also, John Astin is in this movie. Like,
I know.
Gomez.
He's not credited, but it's him.
It's him.
Yeah, he's the guy at the dance that's the get together dance.
Yes.
He's going to try to bring these kids together through the magic of dance. Yeah. And we should say this is our second Marnie Nixon picture. She was our Audrey Hepburn stand-in voice in My Fair Lady. Here in this production, I think she's singing. She's definitely singing Natalie Wood. And I think she sings a little bit of Rita Moreno's.
Yes.
Stuff as well. Doing a great job. I would say, unlike in, you know, when we talked about My Fair Lady, I was saying that, and I found this, by the way, I found this recording, this video of Audrey singing Wouldn't It Be Loverly in her own voice as they were shooting. It's not bad.
No.
No, but it's not, I mean, that's a very difficult role and took a lot of power, but same thing like here. Maria is it. That's a lot. That's some serious singing.
I do. I am. She talks like a parrot.
What is going on with you, Maria?
I feel pretty. Oh, so pretty. I feel pretty and witty and gay. And I pity any girl who's in me today. I feel charming. Oh, so charming. It's alarming how charming I feel. And so pretty that I hardly can believe I'm real. See the pretty girl in that mirror there. Who can that attractive girl be? Such a pretty face, such a pretty dress, such a pretty smile, such a pretty me. I feel stunning and entrancing. Feel like running and dancing for joy. For I loved my pretty, wonderful boy.
Have you met my good friend Maria, the craziest girl on the block? You know her, the minute you see her. She's the one who is in an advanced state of shock. She thinks she's in love, she thinks she's insane.
La, la, la.
She isn't in love, she's merely insane.
It must be the heat or some rare disease.
La, la, la.
Or too much to eat.
Or maybe it's please.
So bring in Marnie Nixon. But I didn't, what I was going to say was, with My Fair Lady, I started to get a little bit fatigued with the dubbing.
Yes.
I didn't feel so much that with this. Maybe it's because the music is just so good.
Yeah. Yeah. That score is amazing. And it's got that, you know, it's also about jazz. You know, jazz is becoming popular again.
So absolutely.
That frenetic energy that comes with it that, you know, is starting to happen in the 50s. And it's exciting and it's thrilling. And it did enormously well. It went on to win 10 Oscars out of 11 nominations. You know, it was like the opposite of The Music Man in 57, where they kind of lost everything. And this one, they swept, including Rita Moreno and George Shakir.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's direction, picture, art direction, which is the sets. I mean,
oh, the sets are so good. Now we can talk about that last set with the spotlight. So brilliant. You know, it's supposed to look like the same set. I'm sure on stage it would have been the same set that the opening scene is shot, that same kind of basketball courts, handball courts kind of set. Only now it is nighttime and you have this one single street light on the asphalt or concrete or asphalt. I guess it's asphalt. Anyway, and the light on the ground is way bigger than that street light would have made, but okay. Anyway, it's this huge circle. And then, but what's so genius about it is the whole perimeter, from the perimeter of the circle outside, radiating out, the ground is wet. The asphalt is wet. But inside the circle, it's dry. And it just, the effect of that, like everybody, all of the people like crowding out to the outside, to the wet asphalt. And she's in this other world in that circle. Oh, it's so beautiful. It's so moving.
They were saying that.
It's so simple.
Yeah, it's very, very simple. And when they were outside, I mean, they really did try to use as much location stuff that they could. And apparently the producers paid gang members to watch the set so that they could help control the crowds, because the dancers, they would use like they would have like the banister like on the street, and he would say, and Jerome Robbins would be like, do your bar work. And so they're doing their pliés and stuff, like these guys in their gear, you know, in their Jets gear, and there's gang guys like screaming out the windows and making fun of them. I mean, it was real. So they were really terrified. Like they have that little, but also that asphalt got so hot in the sun that they were burned.
You can imagine.
There's so much there.
Ugh. Like, ugh. And there's thin little sneaker things that they're wearing, their dance.
Oh,
dance,
they all had
sneakers.
Shin splints aplenty.
Ouchie.
Yeah. But there's thrilling things. Like, I love this. Cool is like one of my favorites when they're had to be. It's just like it's. And I also should say, with anybody's, I wonder, is this the first transgender person that has appeared?
Well, it depends.
Is she a tomboy,
I mean,
or he?
They call her a she. They use female pronouns, but she definitely goes on about she doesn't want to be a girl kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It could be. I mean, I'm trying to think, and correct me if I would. Okay, we're not film majors.
Right, we're not. We're Broadway experts or anything. Or if you
none
can't
of that.
Tell. Yeah.
But I'm sort of thinking of, what's your name? Julie, what's your name? That was in Member of the Wedding. That character, a Member of the Wedding. Very tomboy, you know, that her sister's getting married. Julie, I can't remember your last name. See her in my mind's eye. She was also in East of Eden.
Oh, Julie, she's won a million.
Yes. She's like one of the most renowned.
Redhead.
Stage actors. Yes, exactly her.
She was in Dallas, I think. Or no, Knott's Landing. Knott's Landing.
Knott's Landing.
Harris. Julie Harris. We did it.
We got there. That character, maybe you could argue, but
sure.
I think so. You know, she's got her hair cut shorter than some of the guys. She's dressing like the guys. She talks about, you know, basically wanting to be one of the guys. Yeah, I mean.
And she doesn't want to wear a skirt.
Yeah, especially compared to the other female characters in the actual, you know, all. Not just on both sides. Like if you're looking at the dance.
Yeah, the dancers.
You know,
the
dancers
chicks.
at the come together dance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a case to be made for that. I bet somebody's written a thesis about it.
Someone definitely did. They'll email us and they'll send us a link. Yeah. I was just wondering this last time, but so we were talking about this off the air. Every time I see this movie, I cry. Every single time.
Oh, I was. And it snuck up on me this time. I was saying. I haven't seen it in a while, not that long, but it's been a while. It's probably at least 5 years since the last time I saw it. And I was saying, you know, with all of the continued racial disparity that exists in this country and some of the things that have happened in recent years, I was just bawling. And it totally snuck up on me. Like, I totally thought I was fine. I thought I was totally fine. I was getting ready to could come on here, talk with you about this movie. And then when Maria is pointing the gun at everybody, I lost it. I was a mess.
Yeah.
I just immediately started crying. Just really, just not just like tearing up, but like really crying. Yeah. Cause so Maria, unlike in Romeo and Juliet, where both of them die, I really love the choice in this show that she lives and her whole, you know, she basically has the, we talked about at the end of Romeo and Juliet, there's that soliloquy about basically how futile it all was and how hate is so futile. Somehow, you know, 400 years later, that's still true. And her having her be the one that delivers that is so powerful, and she does it so well. I mean, she's heartbreaking. She's Natalie Wood, but it just really got me. It totally snuck up on me and knocked me right down.
A movie made 60 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's so great all the way around. I agree. Like today, Natalie Wood would not be cast, but today there would be more actresses of color who would have an opportunity at that role. But, you know, given that, I think the themes are so sadly, timelessly American.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and this is true for you know, obviously it's not an American source material, but the updates and the choices that are made to have it done the way it's done in West Side Story does make it kind of uniquely American. And obviously, I mean, okay, yes. I mean, if there's one thing we learned from the Oprah interview with Meghan and Harry, racism is not an American thing, but this is an American show and a very New York show. And it just really holds up. The music is so amazing. I hate to use that word amazing. Sometimes one is truly amazed.
Yeah.
And this was one of those times, like I was saying, I couldn't believe I was sitting there looking at this screen with a bunch of scribbly lines for that many minutes, and I just I had to stop everything I was doing to listen to this overture. Nobody's even singing. and I'm just riveted. The choreography.
Good. That just always just makes me cry because it's so good. It's so good. Talented.
It does make you cry.
Yeah.
They're so talented and they're communicating so much with their movement and the combination of that with that music. Yeah, it's very moving. So book versus movie. Ooh, that's a toughie.
That's a toughie because we're talking about Shakespeare. I'm going to say West Side Story. I'm going to say, seriously, I really love it.
I have to say, as an American, mm-hmm. yeah, as an American, West Side, put it this way, West Side Story makes me cry every single time. I might have teared up a moment here or there watching the Zeffirelli film, and I love that film.
Me too.
But I think because I relate to West Side Story so much as an American, and certainly as a Latina.
Yes.
I'm
a New Yorker.
And a New Yorker, I know. Right. And so for that alone, but then add to it just the, like you were saying, this murderer's row of skill.
Right.
At every turn for every piece of this production. Wow. The editing. I mean,
how
everything.
They did that. I mean, that. And
how did you edit that thing?
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Well, he also, he got fired. Jerome Robbins got fired because he went way, way behind schedule. Like he would do a whole sequence and then he'd be like, hey, let's move the camera up 10 feet and then do that.
Yeah.
Let's bring the camera
which
to
I
the
get.
Level, which I get too, because you want to get everything.
If you're a stage guy,
yeah,
you know, you're a stage guy and you're choreographing, that must have been so difficult. Because, you know, when you're choreographing for stage, you're obviously choreographing. People can see everything all at the same time, unless you're putting something up to hide things from view deliberately, that you would have to change it for film. And then, yeah, of course you would want to see, like, what about this angle? What about that angle? And it's so impressive. It holds up so well. My kids do that snappy thing all the time.
Do they?
Like when they, it's so funny when they start to, and they do like, they don't even know we're watching them, but they'll do this thing where they'll start bickering over, you know, cause we've all been cooped up in this house for a year mm-hmm. now. Right. They'll start bickering over, I'm talking quietly cause we're all in the same little house, start bickering over some little thing. And one of them will start, like, so it's funny. On. It's hilarious. I just remember too, we had, when Todd and I were first dating, I was telling a story about how I had a great aunt who had a husband who was killed in the war, and she would always talk about him as her Romeo. That was my Romeo. He was the love of her life, and she would always say, my Romeo, my Romeo. And he had a great uncle who had a wife who he would always call his Juliet.
Wow.
And I know. But then we later found out that each of them, that was their actual name. Like my aunt's husband's actual name was Romeo.
Romeo? Oh my God.
That was his real name. And Todd's uncle's wife's real name was Juliet.
Incredible.
Wow. Isn't that crazy?
That's star-crossed.
I know, it's so weird. But it's a great story, Mr. Shakespeare. It's a pretty great story that really holds up and can be told in so many different ways and addresses so many human things, hate and love and politics and gender things. You know, it's amazing that it's, again, here's that word again, but I am amazed.
Yeah.
I'm truly, genuinely in awe that this is true of so much of Shakespeare, that this one work has so freaking much in it that can bear being adapted again and again and again and again and again. I will say this, that West Side Story does not have the moments of levity.
No,
Romeo and Juliet. It's Romeo and Juliet is funnier.
Yeah, we do have comic relief there. That's not what's going on here. There's always, because also like the time frame is just a few days, so it's just very compacted, the story. But it's about serious racism too, and we'll talk about, I would say, police brutality, or there's, it's hinted at least, or favoritism.
Bias, at least.
So there's, it's a much more modern tale, but it's, sadly, it's, there's still issues like that here in New York and in America and around the world.
It's great. I mean, if you haven't seen it in a while,
check it out.
You will not regret watching it again. I bought it. Like I said, I bought it. I was like, I have to find this. I'm so glad I did.
I'm so glad you did too. This was fun.
This was great. What are we doing next? Don't we have one more?
We have one more. We have suggestions. So Gypsy is available on Audible or paperback, not Kindle.
Okay.
It's a little long, but
it is kind of long. I have read it before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then we have The King and I.
How long is that?
That's also kind of long.
Okay.
And then we have, going back to what they're available on paperbacks, what we can get. We have Chicago. We have the the original play from 1975. And then there's the huge movie that came out in 2000, 2001. God, was that long ago?
It was.
Oh my God, I feel so old.
Me too.
And then Cabaret.
Oh yeah, Cabaret.
Yeah, because that's based on I Am a Camera, which is a play.
How easy is that to get?
Mine showed up in a couple of days. Like I got it. It's a paperback.
Really? Let me look.
So you decide.
So you got it to keep. Is it, how long is it? Did
Not
I ask
long.
You that
it's
already?
A play. Yeah, it's a play. So it's.
Oh, it's a play.
Yeah, so it doesn't take long to read.
And
Chicago. Those are the short
camera.
Ones.
I Am a Camera.
John Van Druten.
Let's see if I can still get it. Because I kind of would like to do that.
That'd be interesting because Cabaret is fascinating. That story is amazing and the music is great and it's Fosse.
I don't think. Here it is. Okay. Oh, adapted from the Berlin Stories of Christopher Isherwood. Ooh, I wonder if I can get that. Let me see if I can get that. Maybe I'll read that and you read the play.
Ooh, okay.
Let's see. Let's see if we can find that. Yeah, let's do that. I can definitely get the play. So that's it looks like it's pretty easy to
get. Oh, that'd
get
be great. It's one of my favorite musicals. And it's got
Isherwood.
It's amazing. I mean, this Bob Fosse swept the Oscars with the movie. And if you saw the Fosse, is it Fosse and Verdon? That was what it was called. It was FX series Feud.
Yes. Oh, yes. I watched
Michelle
that.
Williams. It's fantastic. So
So here it is. It's the Berlin Stories.
Yep.
I think I'll read that. Read the Berlin Stories and you read the play.
Okay.
Oh yeah, it's not too long. It's 250 pages.
You
it's
can
not terrible
through that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's wonderful. So you guys also think of let's come up with a theme for April. If you guys have any ideas, or we'll just do what we normally do. No big deal. But thank you so much for listening to the show. Follow us on all the things. We do have a promotion with Audible. If you want to check out their service, just go to audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie and you can check out their service for free for a month. I know Romeo and Juliet is on there for sure.
Oh, yeah, it
many
is.
Many versions of it. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fit Chick for Twitter and Instagram. And my blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And we'll be back soon with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book Versus Movie podcast. We're a part of the Electronic Media Collective and we follow the hashtags Potter and Family and Lady Pod Squad. You can find us on social media at Book Versus a Movie. You just spelled it all out for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can send us an email at bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to join our Facebook group, look for us under Book VS Movie Podcast Group in Facebook. Ask to join, and you may be lucky enough to get in. We also have a Patreon page if you want to support the show. Go to patreon.com and look for Book VS Movie Podcast. We record the show with our handy H6N, donated by those of you who are nice enough to contribute to the Patreon page. Thanks so much, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.